And aloha. Welcome to the Travel Angel Radio Show, Hawaii's only locally originated travel show. And so much always news about travel in the news these days, right? I mean, it's always something. And I mean, I didn't hear you, just said you heard, because I was talking here with Sue Gill. Our special guest is back, and I haven't seen her in 5 years. So we're connecting on stories and where she traveled to. And Kathy DeCushy, of course, here. I sponsor, co-host Kathy with Captivating Journeys, and Captivating Journeys understands how to really take care of you right so you don't have to worry about all of those things you don't want to have to worry about. And Captivating Journeys, you can call at 244-1414. Yes, they still will answer the phone and talk to you. There's actually a person there. So nice to know.
And more than one person.
More than one person, that's right. And so there's catching up a little bit on the travel news. I mean, this was a weird one. This was the disturbance on L.A. to Hawaii flight brings FBI and fighter jets. Now, I just saw an update on this. This was all over the news, right, because it was close to here. And then you hear fighter jets and what's going on. And I think it's partly because this guy was from Turkey. And the way I first heard the story is that he was trying to take over the plane. Then I heard version two was like he just wanted to sit in first class. But then he had his computer with him. And now when people see a computer, they think bombs or something. Like, hello, everyone's got a computer. It doesn't mean it's a bomb. But so they've kind of changed the story around a bit. But I'm trying to imagine what it must have been like for the people on board that plane to see fighter jets and the FBI and everything. But I think it seemed like it was a little bit of an overreaction. And then they were thinking the guy might have had some mental problems or something as well. Or, you know, right? Or,
oh, and you just type of people seem to have a little bit of some issues.
And then there was the, what you just heard about a bomb in
Manchester.
It was
on the radio. Some kind of explosion at the Ariana Grande concert in Manchester, England. Mm. So I guess it just happened. So,
well, you know,
they don't know much about it.
It's always interesting because we're now so nervous about things that every time we hear anything, it is like, wow. And it goes, I mean, look at three. I'm sure some of these are about that. Yes. Yes, number of fatalities confirmed during an Ariana Grande concert in Manchester, England. So there you go. Multiple fatalities. So, but there is always going to be these things. And today we're going to talk about why that shouldn't stop you from traveling. Even though we hear this in the news sometimes every hour. We're going to be talking about the wonderful adventures of Sue. And Andrea and Gary are going to call in because Sue went on that trip to Egypt amidst, actually, the scare with the bombings that happened in the church there. I think, were you en route when that happened?
We were in South Africa when that occurred. So, and we heard about it through Kathy, who emailed us, because we really weren't getting, you know, any news from outside the world because we were on animal safari. So we were in the bush, so we didn't really hear anything on the TV. And then Kathy emailed me and said, oh, by the way, and I'm checking with Gary to make sure everything's okay. And I'm like, whatever, you know, we're here, we're going to go. So,
well, it was a pretty interesting time as well, because not only that, I think it was a week and a half later, the Pope was scheduled to go to Cairo. And, I mean, a lot of people thought, well, the Pope probably will cancel because what kind of security can cover that? You know, and there was this bombing that just happened, and it was a Christian church. And but he went, and I guess he was there while you were down the Nile.
That's correct. Yeah, he was. And Mohammed Nazmi, who owns the
Quest Travel
in Cairo, handled his security and his travel arrangements. So
wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
if he can cover the Pope,
he can cover anybody.
I mean,
correct.
I really was looking
the best
on
to his abilities, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
I saw some of that coverage on TV, and there were like tanks covering all the bridges and everything, right? I mean, it was major security, of course, and so I was impressed. And I didn't realize Mohammed did that kind of security. So any travel deals still going on? Do we still have the Paul Gauguin availabilities happening on the special deals for that?
There are still Paul Gauguin, the Hawaii resident special. They have some fall dates and beginning, I think, up through February of next year on the 7-night sailings.
And it's $2,100 for a balcony on the 7 nights? Is that the price?
Yeah, I forgot my phone. So it's about that price. Yeah.
Yeah. You get a memory too. Have you been on one of those, Sue?
We have been on the Paul Gauguin twice. We did the Tahitian cruise, and then we did the 11-day that went through Tahiti and to the Cook Islands.
Oh, my gosh.
Just 2 years ago, which Kathy booked for us, and it was awesome, and it's such great value. If you're a Kama Aina, you can get that great rate. It's one of the best ships I've ever been on.
Isn't it beautiful? It's so classy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's classy. The staff is awesome. The food is amazing.
Unbelievable.
And it's the best way to see Tahiti. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because if you go down there, you want to see all the islands, you've got to hop on a plane and go inter-island. This way, the ship just takes you there overnight, and you wake up in the morning, and you're at Moorea or Bora Bora or Huaheine. So, yeah, it's awesome. It's really a great trip.
She's good at this.
Sue and I were actually on the same sailing.
Really?
It's about 4 years.
Four years ago.
Well, it was about 3 or 4 years ago I went, and I loved it, and I want to go again, actually.
I do, too.
Because Keola Beamer, Tom Vendetti, Cindy Schenck.
Yeah, because that's who you were with.
Yeah.
They're going October 28th.
Oh, they're going again? Yeah, yes. Doug and Cindy Schenck and Dart and I were with on that trip, and then we reconnected with Kathy and Rex, and so, yeah, we had a great trip. Yeah, it was
you like the long trips.
We did, because we went down and did, we also did the Aranui. We did the freighter cruise to the Marquesas, so that was a two-week trip. So we did the Paul Gauguin, a week in Huaheine.
And tell me, wait, at a freighter trip?
Yeah, there's a freighter called the Aranui, and it sails from Papeete, Tahiti, and goes to the Marquesa Islands, and it's a two-week cruise, and they actually provide all the supplies for all the remote valleys in the Marquesa Islands. There's 8 of them, and they go into these remote valleys that have no roads or no other transportation out, and they are their lifeline. So they go sail every 3 weeks, and they take the supplies to these islands. So we got to see the Marquesas.
How did you hear about that one?
It's something I've always known about. Like I had cut it out an article in the 90s, and since then they've had like 4 Aranuis. They keep, you know, making them nicer, but still a freighter, the one we went on. But they have a new one now, which is more cruise ship accommodation, so the rooms are nicer, and I think all the amenities are a little more cruise ship oriented. But it's still a freighter,
so are you in a small bunk? Is it like
when we went on the Aranui 4, the old one, it was just a little cabin with 2 bunks and a porthole, you know, and a bathroom. It was comfortable, but you know, bare bones. But the new one is, I just had 6 friends who went on it in January, and they said it was amazing.
Wow.
And the Marquesan crew is awesome. And, it's a really fun trip if you want to see the Marquesas. It's really the only way to see all the islands because there's not airports on all the islands.
So you kind of just figure it out as you go. You get off there and just do your own thing and wander around.
It's a cultural trip. So you have lectures when you're at sea. You have lectures from archaeologists or anthropologists, you know, people that are really connected, linguists that are connected down in Polynesia.
Huh.
And then when you go ashore, you do cultural things like whatever village you're going to. They may make handicrafts, so you get to go see them do that, and they almost always prepare a meal for you, like their version of a luau with whatever they have.
Huh.
And then, of course, you go and see all the old, heiau statues, you know. So it's a lot of cultural things, hiking into the jungle. So every day that you're in a port, based around the freighter's schedule, you actually go and do an activity. So it's amazing.
I think that sounds so fun. I think that really sounds wonderful.
It's kind of adventure travel because it's not like, you know, sometimes the conditions are a little rocky and you have to get into the boat and, you know, go and land on shore or sometimes go through the water to get on the beach and things like that. But it was really an amazing experience,
2 weeks almost.
Yeah, two weeks. Yeah, and it stops in the Tuamotos. As well.
And did you saw islands probably that most people don't usually see.
Probably. Mm-hmm. And we rode horses on one of the islands,
oh,
too.
How cool.
We got off the ship and rode horses.
Sue's a horse lover. I mean, a little backstory on Sue. Sue has really helped keep some of the trails open and to horseback riding people. She's really been an activist on a lot of trails. You've done a lot of work. I've kind of lost track on it, but I know
you were... Well, I'm still involved with Nala Hele, which is, you know, the Trails and Access arm of the Department of Forestry for the Department of Land and Natural Resources. So I'm still on their advisory council, and we're always trying hard to open up trails for people to enjoy for hiking, biking, and horses. And, you know, we have limited land here, so we try to do what we can with what we have. But
were you helpful doing that, opening up the top of Olinda Road, making sure that road could happen, the trail could happen up there?
No, I'm going to say no. That was another group that that spearheaded that, you know, that was a situation with Haleakala Ranch and
right.
stuff. Yeah, we worked with Haleakala Ranch originally to gain access in a monthly hike, which I believe you were on one of them. But where it went from there had nothing to do with Nalahele. But our big thing is Makawao Forest Reserve, the Kahakapau trail system,
yep.
which is amazing for mountain bikers, horses,
it
and hikers.
It is, but yeah. I hike up there a lot. But it's changed since the biking people have kind of taken over. And I have to say, you being a horse person, I've many times wondered if horse people even want to go up there anymore, because so many bikes are up there now, and there's so much screaming and yelling with the kids and noise and the sound of things going off.
Well, you know, the thing is that a lot of the bike trails are routed just for bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So the ones for hikers and horses are separate. So we did try really hard to separate that out. You know, as far as the skills area and the pump track for kids and stuff, you know, the mountain bikers really don't have any other trails either. So,
mm-hmm.
and it was really important to create something for the children to be able to get into the sport safely and family-oriented
mm-hmm.
things. So there's always a trade-off. That's kind of the downside of living on an island that has limited resources. So
well, good,
we're,
good
we're trying to share, you know.
No,
so.
Good for you. I have a good positive attitude about that. So you're retired, and all of a sudden you just decide to travel all the time. I mean, I'm so jealous. I told Kathy, I said, I would love to be doing what you're doing.
Me
I mean,
too.
I mean, just like, wow, you know, just traveling all these places. This last trip was really interesting because you didn't just go to Egypt. You took off for like 3 weeks before that and went around all these places in Africa?
Yes, we did. We left from Maui, went to Amsterdam for a few days to break up the jet lag, and then flew to Cape Town. So we saw Cape Town, South Africa, and then we went to Kruger National Park and did game drives there.
That's outside.
That's part of South Africa also. It's a huge national park that I think was formed in like the 1930s. And I want to say it's like 3 million acres and all
oh
the I mean there's a perimeter fence but the animals are free and it's amazing.
Wow.
And so we went there and did
3 million acres.
Yeah, it's huge. It's a huge part of South Africa. It was set aside early enough where they could, you know, do this and protect the animals. So and then from there we flew to Zimbabwe and saw Victoria Falls. And
oh, what that looks so beautiful.
Yeah,
what was
it was
it
really
like
amazing.
Seeing it?
It's beautiful. It's a really beautiful place. And then from there we went to Botswana. And in Botswana is really trying to protect the animals, particularly the elephants. They have 150,000 elephants in Botswana.
Wow.
And because the country is fairly stable and they do have diamonds as an industry, so people are employed and they're not, you know, trying to go out and poach the elephants as much. Not that it's not happening, but they're trying really hard to stop that. The animals are really thriving there, and they were going after a market that's low impact and higher cost, but low impact, you know, visiting. And what they have there is the Okavango Delta, which is a wetlands area that floods on an annual basis. And that's where the animals migrate to because there's so much, you know, grazing and everything for the plant-based animals, and then of course all the predators come because all the other animals are there. So it's a really amazingly beautiful place, and to get there you have to fly in a bush plane and land on a dirt strip. So it's pretty cool. Yeah, it was a great experience.
I can't even imagine flying in on a bush plane. Did you get nervous?
No. It was beautiful weather, and you could look down and see all the animals on the ground,
oh,
all the elephants at the water.
Did it feel like out of Africa?
It did. It did. It was amazing.
Is those great shots from the plane and out of Africa? It's like, oh, my God.
That's pretty much what it feels like, yeah.
Wow.
That was a good movie.
I love that movie. Every now and then, I guess, I don't think it's 4 or 5 times I've seen it now. So let's back up because you're covering so much territory. Okay, let's go back to Victoria Falls. I've never been to Victoria Falls. How's it set up? How do you get there? What's it like?
Well, you can actually fly. We flew from Johannesburg, South Africa, to Victoria Falls. I mean, it's actually an airport. It's a really nice, brand-new, very modern airport. And we were greeted by a guide who took us to our camp. We stayed at a place called the Elephant Camp.
Outside?
Yes. Well, it's actually part of an animal sanctuary. It's a 5,000-acre animal sanctuary that they've taken on orphan elephants. So elephants whose you know, mothers have been poached and killed, or, you know, ex-circus animals, performance, you know, elephants, things like that.
There'll be a lot more of those.
Yeah, so they've taken on all these orphan elephants, and they work with them, and we actually got to ride on them, which was great. Mm-hmm. And then after they're done, you know, with their little tourist interaction, then they get to just go free all day long, and then at the end of the day, they bring them into an enclosure because there are, you know, predators and things out there. But that was an amazing experience because you get to interact with the elephants and, you know, and give them a treat, and, you know, and they're really curious about you, and they're really gentle. They're so big, but they're so gentle. It was an amazing experience. So
did they just let you go in a circle, or are you actually going out on a trail?
No, we went on a safari for about an hour and a half. So we rode
on the elephant.
Yeah,
on
the back of the elephant with the handler. So and the gentlemen that handle these elephants, some of them have been with these elephants for 23 years. I mean, they go home for a couple of weeks, and then they come back for 2 months, and they're with the elephants 24/7, and they absolutely love them and just so care for them so much. It's just amazing. It was really heartwarming to see them rescuing.
And how did you find out about this place?
Well, you know, one of the things I did is I did work with an Africa specialist, two women that have a company in California, and they lived in Africa for 30 years. So they're really kind of connected on places to go and things to do. So I gave them an idea of what we'd like to do, and they put together an itinerary, and we fine-tuned it, and that was pretty much how we went there. But they ask you what animals do you want to see? And I said, well, elephants, you know. So they really plugged us in with the elephant experience.
Did you have to get special shots?
We did. We took for typhoid, and you should have hepatitis A and hepatitis B, but typhoid pretty much. And of course, when you're in that part of the world, there is a malaria threat. It was low risk while we were there because it was dry, but we did take anti-malarial pills, which were fine. We didn't have any side effects or anything with them. They were very easy to take.
And you didn't worry about any other things
going on? No, they're really, because the countries we were in do not have yellow fever, so it wasn't an issue. Yeah, I actually did a consult with a travel doctor on where we were going. We gave them our itinerary, and they told us what things we should have, so it was pretty easy.
So the falls, though, you haven't mentioned the falls.
Okay, so the falls, at the time that we were there, the Zambezi River, which feeds the falls, was at peak height. So the water was, I mean, it was amazing, the volume of water that was going out the falls. And you've probably heard sometimes they call Victoria Falls the smoke that thunders because it sends up a mist that looks like smoke. And it was interesting when we landed at the Victoria Falls airport, there were some other people in the transport van with us, and he goes, oh my God, look, there's a fire over there. And I said, no, that's the mist from the falls. You know, that's the smoke that thunders. And it really, you can see it for miles. Because,
really?
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, during the dry season, not so much, but while we were there, it was very active. So, yeah.
Did you take like a million pictures?
We did. We took a lot of pictures.
Did you bring a real camera or just do it?
We brought a real camera, and I used my cell phone too. So we took 1,600 photos on our camera.
That's
so
not that bad. I mean,
but it's a
really
lot. It's like I'm going, oh my God.
Then you got to sort through.
Exactly. And I'm going to have to edit them down if we want to show our friends.
Year, right?
So anyways.
God, so okay. So now you've done South Africa. You did Victoria Falls. You went to the elephant camp.
Right.
And then where did you go next?
After we left Africa, we didn't. We went to Botswana. So we were driven into Botswana from Zimbabwe. We stayed at another place called Elephant Camp, which is in the Chobe National Park. And that's the park that I told you has about 150,000 elephants. And so we did game drives there, and that was really amazing. And it's on the river right there, which was high at the time, so there was lots of hippos. We did a riverboat trip, so we saw lots of hippos and crocodiles.
Wow.
And it was beautiful with a lot of water lilies, and it was really lovely. So Chobe National Park is really a beautiful park to go to.
Was it like anything else you'd been to?
No. I mean, just going into an environment where you have the African wild animals is just, you know, it's like you see on TV or you see in the zoo, but they're in their own habitat. And wherever you stay there, you're not fenced in. So when you go to your room at night, you have to be escorted by a guard, you know, a ranger. in case there's animals poking around and stuff. So yeah, it's pretty neat. They're all free and we're caged up, so it's kind of a nice feeling.
it's amazing. So that was a 3-week trip, right?
Yes. Yeah. Between
which was that enough? Or did you feel?
I'm definitely ready to go back to Africa. I didn't have enough of Africa. I'd like to go back to Botswana. There's more in Botswana I'd like to see. I thought it was an amazing experience. Yeah.
Everyone loves Botswana.
I've heard that.
There you go. I want to see your face. I don't want to get it close enough. There you go.
Okay.
No, because I've never been to Africa. You haven't been, have you, Kathy?
I haven't been.
Yeah. I've heard some things, you know, about health issues and scares and things like that sometimes, you know, so, yeah.
I think that the countries we went to are pretty much, they're pretty civilized, you know, like certainly South Africa and all the countries.
Well, you do bottled water and you take care of your
Yeah, connection. Exactly. Yeah, you know, but you drink bottled water and, you know, but like in Cape Town and all the camps are really, they're very ecologically sensitive about everything that happens there. And they make sure that, you know, the environment is healthy and safe for you. It's not like you're living out in the dirt or anything like that. They're pretty comfortable, the camps. Even though they're tented camps and stuff like that, they're on a permanent platform.
It sounds like you went at the right time of the year on top of that. Was that February, March?
It was actually April.
It was April.
We were there. Yeah, because we left at the end of March to head over that way. Yeah, that was in South Africa, was fall going into winter. So that was really, they say pretty much the two best times of year to go there are the fall, which is March, April, going into May, or September, October. Mm-hmm. So if you go there in their summertime, it's their rainy season.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then in the wintertime, it's chilly.
And it wasn't, the temperature was fine. When
it
you
was perfect. It was perfect. Warm during the day and cool at night for sleeping and stuff. Yeah, that was really nice.
You didn't have to worry about too many flies, mosquitoes, and thingies.
No, not at all. I mean, we made sure when we went out that we covered up. We had long sleeve, pants and long pants and long sleeve shirts on and stuff. And we did wear mosquito repellent on our exposed areas and stuff. But we didn't see that many mosquitoes at all.
You didn't do any horseback riding.
No, I didn't. I rode a camel and I rode an elephant.
You could ride horses here, right?
Yeah, well, that was it. I thought I wanted, because there were times that we could have ridden horses instead of camels, but I go, no, I want to ride a camel. I've never been on a camel before. So anyway, so it was amazing. So
then did you decide to go on from there? Now, just for my curiosity, because this is an extended trip. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you've gone 3 weeks, right? So how do you, I mean, you are pretty remote. I mean, how do you check in from time to time? And you probably couldn't do phone calls? Or how did that work with
you? No, you know, interestingly enough, there's communication everywhere. You can get Wi-Fi.
Really?
Yeah, we had Wi-Fi in the Okavango Delta.
Oh, wow.
Because that's how those camps communicate. Their emails and stuff like that. So we had Wi-Fi. And I wouldn't say that the phone worked in those areas, but Wi-Fi did. So, we were able to keep up with emails and things like that. And then when we were in the cities or, switching planes or whatever, you would get your texts and stuff. So it wasn't really, I pretty much told people, oh, we're going to be unavailable for this period of time. Mm-hmm. But I found out that there was very few times that we didn't have access.
Wow, because it sounds far away.
It is, but it's such a small world now, and that's the thing that's happened is instead of trying to put infrastructure in for phones, they just put a cell tower up and everybody has a cell phone, and that's how the world communicates now. So, yeah, it was pretty accessible, but I wasn't watching the news, so I wasn't going to spend my time listening to what was going on in the world.
Did you get a special phone for that or a special
plan? No, I just took my iPhone. I did. I got an international plan with unlimited texting and, a reduced rate on phone calls. But we didn't really make any phone calls. So,
yeah.
So, no, it worked out really good.
All right. So then you got your Africa part through there. But then you want to go to Egypt and you didn't go home or anything, right? You stayed over there or did you go home first before you went to Egypt?
Oh, no. It's because it's halfway around the world. Yeah. It's a 12-hour time difference. So, no, that's a long flight.
Yeah.
No, from when we left Botswana, we flew to Johannesburg, South Africa. And we had like a 6-hour time window there, which really was good because we left our bigger suitcases in Johannesburg and stored them. And we
Smart.
Took small packs. Well, when you go into the Okavango Delta, you have to go in bush planes, so you're allowed only a duffel bag. So we downsized our suitcases and took those with us for 10 days, left our suitcases in Johannesburg Airport, and then when we came back, we picked up our suitcases, and which, like I said, we had 6 hours from the time we landed from Botswana till we took off for Cairo. So it gave us time to organize everything and stuff. So so then we flew from Johannesburg to Cairo, which was a 6.5 hour flight. And we flew through the night and landed there
that's
at 5:30
So that's about the distance of here to the West Coast.
Yeah. Or like California. Colorado you know, Arizona, something like that. So,
and so then you go into Cairo. You've never been to Egypt before.
Nope. Mm-hmm. Never been to that continent at all. And in fact, after we visited the African continent, we have now been on all the continents because we went to Antarctica last year.
So that's great. Yeah. Congratulations.
So now so I can claim to fame there. We've been to all the continents. But but yeah, we flew into Cairo, and you know, the trip that Gary and Andrea Smith put together along with Mohammed Nazmi of Quest Travel in Cairo, they have their people meet you, and literally you get off the plane and there's somebody waiting for you even before you go through immigration or customs, and they guide you right through the whole process. Once they get you guided through, they meet you at the baggage claim, you get your bags, and you're in a van on your way to your hotel. And we got in at 5:30 in the morning, and we were literally from the airport to our hotel, checked in and in our room by 7 o'clock in the morning.
That's unbelievable.
That was really unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah, so that it was just so smooth. And it's a 45-minute trip from the airport to the hotel we were staying at
in
Giza.
Now, where'd you stay in Giza?
We stayed in Giza at the Mina House, which is a very...
that's where you stayed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very historical... you know, hotel that you
it's
know,
an old hotel.
Well, it was a hunting lodge of the king back in the 1800s, and then he sold it to a British family who then turned it into a, you know, friends to come and visit, and then it turned into a hotel because it's right at the base of the pyramids and the Sphinx. It's right
and
there.
The view of the pyramids from your
from
room.
From your room, yeah. It's an amazing location.
Yeah.
I mean, they are right on the edge of the Giza Plateau where the pyramids and the Sphinx are located. So you can't get any closer.
I mean, I love old hotels that have that vibe that, you know, people have been going there for years seeing that site. You know, it's just wonderful.
It has so much history.
Old pictures and things? Do they
have
some of those?
Well, the whole lobby and even your rooms. And we did a tour, historical tour.
I was just going to say, did you do the tour?
Yeah. It was limited because they're restoring a lot of the hotel because it's a national historical monument that it belongs to the government, actually, because it's so old, the old part of the hotel. There are newer wings where the rooms are and stuff, but they're doing a restoration of it. But we did get to go to the Winston Churchill suite and the Montgomery suite. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was amazing to see these rooms that were used at the time.
Did you
World
eat
War
there? Did you have breakfast there and everything?
We did eat there. Mm-hmm. The breakfast was amazing. And they had three restaurants in the hotel, an Egyptian restaurant. They had a fabulous Indian restaurant. It was really, really good. We ate there actually twice. It was so good. So, the food is really good there. So, yeah, and it's a beautiful property with a huge pool and just great amenities. Yeah.
Did you get a nice view?
Yeah, nice view of the pyramids, right from our room. So yeah.
Did you meet Hamed?
Yes.
We love Hamed.
He's with the hotel,
he's
right?
He's with the hotel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
He had breakfast with us a couple mornings.
Oh,
so
good.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, he was amazing. Yeah, and all the staff there is wonderful. I mean, you really get greeted. You know, we got there a day early, and then the next day when everybody had arrived, we all had breakfast with Mohammed from Quest Travel and Andrea and Gary and all the group that we were traveling with. And total, our group was a small group. There were 9 of us with Andrea and Gary. So it was a very comfortable size group. So,
well, I'm going to text them because they were supposed to call in. I think they may have forgotten sometimes. But
you just
talk to
I
them,
talked
right?
to him and he was...
Okay.
But anyways,
probably
we don't need them to talk about the trip.
No, absolutely. But you know, it's so interesting because both of you have been on this trip and we have to talk about the impact of the fact that the fear and the tourism and the fact that tourism's really been hit hard and the economy is devastated by the fact that tourists are afraid to come. Mainly, I guess, mostly American tourists, I would imagine. We were just talking, Sue, before we started about the fact that you did see Indians and you saw Chinese.
Yeah, the Chinese and Indians seem to be coming back, or not coming back, but coming to Egypt. So yeah, they were hopeful that, you know, there were more people coming. But yes, Westerners seem to be scarce. We did not see a lot of Westerners there, but we did see a lot of people, like I said, from India and China that were traveling there in larger groups and stuff. But, you know, it's sad because it's such a big part of their economy, tourism, you know, mm-hmm. because really Egypt is so unique with all the, you know, the temples and the tombs and the Sphinx.
There's nothing like it in the world.
There's nothing like it in the world. It's unbelievable. And, you know, and I think everyone should be able to see it. It's just amazing. But we never, the whole time we were there, we never felt uncomfortable or, you know, compromised in any way. We
found security around the hotel.
Yeah, mm-hmm. there's a lot of security, but they're really, and it's not a negative kind of security, it's a positive. They have tourism police. They want people to feel comfortable
right.
there, and they want, if there are people that are going to create problems, to know there's a presence, mm-hmm. and they're not going to try it. And mm-hmm. so I felt really comfortable there, and I found that the Egyptian people, the people that are involved in tourism speak English really well, and they have a great sense of humor. They get our sense of humor, and you could have fun with them, and they're happy to have you there. You know, we felt very welcomed.
I watched this special on PBS about how much money they're spending in time building this brand new museum.
Mm, yes.
Did you see that being constructed there?
We did, because it's right at Giza. Mm-hmm. And the plan is they're hoping to have it open by the end of this year. We did have the opportunity at the end of our stay to go to the Cairo Museum.
Oh, that's very old, but it's amazing. Again, I mean, think of the history of that place.
Well, it is amazing, but the interesting thing, it's so old because mm-hmm. it was built, I think, 1910. But we are with an amazing archaeologist. We were with him, and he was explaining to us that they're really coming up against how are they going to move, like the King Tut exhibit, mm-hmm. because there's so much traffic in Cairo. Cairo does have 22 mm-hmm. million people, so it's pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. There's no rules on the road. You definitely want to go there in a tour group. Mm-hmm. You do not want to go as a solo traveler, and you don't want to rent a car because it's pretty wild. But he was saying that they're trying to figure out how to move that exhibit from the Cairo Museum, which is in Cairo, to Giza. And they're thinking they're going to do a convoy, like, in the middle of the night. But even then, the roads are, you know, pretty active, too.
Well, so. And it's a security issue,
it's a security
too, because
issue.
Everyone's going to know.
Absolutely.
Not like people won't know things are being moved out. And I do believe when they had that terrible riot going on there and in the square that people did attack, and there were items stolen.
Yeah, people did break into the Cairo Museum. And then I think there was 8 items that were taken that were really, and I think they recovered 5 out of the 8.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, they did recover. They found, they looked around and found them in trash cans.
I mean, I have,
like,
I've been to Egypt twice, but I mean, as I remember in my mind, it's like, you know, you're seeing, it's just like it's just laid at any old museum, nothing special, no special lighting, and you're seeing these items that are unbelievable, and they're just laying like nothing special.
I know.
And they're just kind of, so that's why it's going to be really interesting to have them highlighted beautifully with the right kind of exhibit
yes.
in the new place, because you're seeing things that are so amazing, but you
the
you
lighting,
know
yeah,
it.
The lighting's poor.
Yes.
No, it's true, and I got a chuckle because the description cards are index cards, 3x5
yes.
index cards.
Yes, typed out.
That were typed out on
yes.
a typewriter,
yes.
yeah. And I'm like going, okay, these are really old, and they're yellow, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a description of all those amazing things that have, you know, that are like, you know, 4 or 5,000
years old. They're
priceless,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Like priceless
so,
things.
So it'll be interesting. I think the Cairo Museum, they're going to keep that open, but they're going to leave more of the larger pieces,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the stone sculptures and things like that. And I think a lot of the smaller things will move to the new museum. So
they say they have so much stuff that there's no way they can even exhibit it all.
No, it's there's so much storage.
Yeah.
I was asking about that, and there's just an amazing amount of storage in
mm-hmm.
that Cairo Museum of things that
aren't even out
have
there.
Never been displayed. So, I think it would take a zillion archaeologists a long time just to go through all that and get it out. But at least they're making an attempt to build a new museum. And it is out at Giza where the pyramids and the Sphinx are. And that's.
So when did you get to go in the pyramids?
Well, when you, your first day, your first actual day, we get to go and see the Sphinx. So we
mm-hmm.
had a private visit at the Sphinx, which
mm-hmm.
At 6 in the morning you go over there, and you're there for 2 hours with just your group. And if you're a regular tourist, not a special tourist like we were, you're up on a raised area with a fence around, so you
mm-hmm.
don't get to get close to the Sphinx. We got to go right down to the Sphinx in
How
between
wonderful.
The paws of the Sphinx.
Wow.
And I was given the key to unlock the gate.
No.
So I unlocked the gate to go
oh,
into
the
Sphinx.
Oh, and that's the ancient gate.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Now,
yeah.
they're still restoring that, right?
You know, I would say they are, but it's in pretty good condition.
Because yeah, I was there restored was a lot of
they've restored a lot of it. It's in pretty good condition. But
it's
there was
a beautiful piece.
It is, and it's bigger than people even imagine. Yeah. And up until, I think, the 1950s, only the head was sticking out because it was buried in sand. And then they start.
It's hard to imagine that.
Yeah, yeah, I know, but you see old pictures where the Sphinx has got sand up to his neck.
That's right,
you know, so. And then that was our morning adventure. And then in the afternoon, we had a private visit into the Great Pyramid of the Tomb of Cheops. And that was from 4 to 6. And it was just our group inside. So we went up into the tomb.
You did the little stairway up inside. The deal.
And normally they let 100 people in there a day. You get to go in for like 10 minutes. We got to go in when everybody was gone. And we were there for 2 hours, and it was so powerful.
With the meditation.
I don't know how you would be able to even describe the energy there, but it is very, very palpable, the presence of this magical energy. Number one, the sound, okay? You got to realize that there's a difference in the sound when you go inside, and it's very, very quiet, but the stones carry this different kind of
vibration. It's amazing.
And you have to bend down because it's low, right?
Yes. So
then you get in there, and it's like immediately you're like transported. I really truly inside, I still can remember how we felt transported inside there.
That was, to me, the powerful thing about this trip is that everywhere you went, it was so old, you know, like 2500 BC, 3000 BC, and you thought about the people that came before you. You were standing there, and you thought about,
how did they do this?
Well, how did they do that, for number one? But just the energy of all the people that came before you, that, you know, the priests of the temples that were worshiping the gods and, you know, all of that. And everywhere you went, you got that energy. It was just amazing. So, and, you know,
it is kind of timeless.
It is very timeless, you know. I mean, it really shows you as we go through the centuries here, you know, for a long, long time.
2,000 years ago, and here we are thinking, wow. And all the people that have been through there, and all kind of with the sacred feeling, of course. I mean, it's one of the great power spots of the world. There's no doubt about it.
It really is. And if you visit there and you don't get that, that's too bad that you missed it, because it is really an amazingly powerful experience. Very spiritual, very metaphysical. You know, and I think it's more on that level than saying, gee, how many columns are in this temple, you know, the kind of nuts and bolts of it. You don't want to go there. You really want to pick up on the energy, the spiritualism of it, the people, their beliefs, and just the fact that they were so evolved in terms of how they built everything and how they figured things out. And you can really see that by looking at all the hieroglyphics, the kind of things that went on.
It was an enlightened society. There's no doubt about it. And I have to, even though they didn't call, I have to give a shout out to Gary and Andrea, because number one, I mean, that Andrea is just the real thing. I mean, it's authentic with her. She's just really an enlightened being. I mean, she's truly amazing, and you see it in her artwork. And the fact that not only does she have that spirituality, but she likes doing things first class, which I really appreciate. I mean, when you're with Andrea and Gary, you know this, Kathy. I mean, they do everything first class, right? And I guess Mohammed wasn't there with you at that time, or was he there in the beginning?
No, he's because the Pope was coming. So he is with you in Cairo. But when we were on the Nile, we had Emil, who is the Egyptologist and tour guide that actually is with you from the very beginning up until we left Aswan and came back to Cairo. And then we had Mr. Akram, that was the archaeologist in Cairo. But Emil, Kathy will bear me out, is amazing. He is a very unique character. And what was really neat about Emil that we appreciate is wherever you went, he painted the picture. Okay, you're at the Temple of Hatshepsut. Okay, visualize that there are 20,000 people standing down here on summer solstice, and the queen comes out and she spreads her wings, and they're gold, and the sun is shimmering off of it, and the top of the temple is gold. I'm getting chicken skin.
Me too.
Talking about it. But he does. Yeah. He paints this picture of imagine what it was like.
Imagine that is what he would say. Imagine that.
Yeah, so, and everywhere we went, he's like, you know, his favorite, Kathy will bear me out, this is funny, he's like, hello, come over here by me. You know, we're all looking around, come over here, get closer. And then he starts, you know, telling the story. Yeah, and he's just an amazing, he's an amazing man.
Well, we should also mention, it's a very small group. This is not, you're not with 30 or 40 people
here. No, and that's the beauty of this trip. It is a small group.
Intimate.
Very intimate. Yes. And it's just, I don't even know how to describe it. It was the most amazing experience, though, really was.
I would, when you went into the temples and he would start chanting.
I think this is Andrea.
I was like, there you are.
We were wondering where you were.
Didn't have the number.
You know what? I psychically just picked up on that, so I just sent you the number. Sue's here and Kathy's here, and we've just been raving. Sue is doing a great job describing this trip. Boy,
yeah, she's good.
She sold the trip. She sold me,
I'm sure
a lot of other people.
Hey, Gary.
Here's what I told Andrea when I walked in the door. We really don't have to call if we can't find the number because Sue is going to say so many wonderful things.
Yes.
And she really helped me out because I used to ask her questions. So, yeah, Sue, I'm so glad you're there.
Oh, well, thank you, Gary. I know they kept saying, Sue, so what time are we supposed to be there? And where are we going tomorrow? And I'm like, and they like, she knows. Go ask her. It cracked me up every time. Like, Gary, go, now what time are we supposed to be there tomorrow? I'm like, wait a minute, whose trip is this?
Well, I want to go so much now. We covered the whole beginning of the trip and the hotel, and she talked about the Sphinx, and we talked about the pyramid, and we went up to a swan, and she described the whole. What's his name, the guy that was there?
Emil.
Yeah, so this is where we stand now. So let's move on to what, and we're on the Nile now, right?
Yeah.
We're on the Nile with Emil. He's the country mouse Egyptologist, and we call Mohammed Nazmi the one who's the boss of the company, the city mouse. But Emil has a unique way of describing things, and I'm sure Sue and Dart really enjoyed the horse cart ride through Luxor, waving to everybody.
Every year,
that's my highlight.
Yeah, he always has a surprise for you when you go into Luxor. We went to Edfu, we went in horse and buggy to the temple, and then when we got to Aswan, he had a boat come over and pick us up, and he took us all the way up the Nile River close to the High Dam. And we got to see all these amazing little Nubian villages, and it was just, and we watched sunset, and we saw like 40 camels going home across the sand dunes.
Oh.
So there was always a surprise, which I thought was amazing. So,
And as Sue, Emil does this on his own. I mean, he pays for it. It isn't part of Quest Journey or anything.
Because we never did that either.
Oh, good.
We've taken Felucca rides, but we've never taken that ride.
That's the first time we've taken that ride.
It was so beautiful.
Andrea, I'm opening up their line. If you want to call in on the other line rather than talk over Gary's shoulder, you can call 242-7800.
You know, I'm going to stay on this phone because my phone doesn't work.
Okay.
So we'll switch it back and forth.
And you know, I was mentioning about you, the fact that, you know, you and Gary and Mohammed, and it's such a first-class intimate experience that, I mean, and Sue's just really explaining how special it feels when you have an opportunity to do a trip like this with really that spiritual, true, authentic spirituality that you carry, Andrea, and that you understand, because I know you lived in Egypt before. I mean, you can see it in your paintings and everything.
You know, I've been there so many times, and honestly, each time I go, this time, things that just could not register before really, really registered. Mm-hmm. And I'd say the most important thing I got in touch with was that the original people who came to Egypt and deposited this information at the oldest temples have the most refined art. And the art tells me a lot. And then as it goes on, you know, the art is gorgeous. You can't say anything that's not exquisite about the temples because they're beyond. However, the art is not as refined. The cuts are much deeper. The pharaohs came in and they carved their initials in that stone like 8 inches deep. You know, so it was... And the initial vibration was no ego. And then as it went on in time, I think whoever came here left, went back to wherever they came from, and then they left it to us to deal with, and we just couldn't hold the vibration of just God and no ego, basically. So,
well, there's also something unique in Egypt that I can't, I mean, it's been years, but I still remember to this day, is the balance. There is an energy that when I stand in front of those statues, I get aligned. I mean, I feel the balance like I don't feel in front of anything. There's just this amazing power conveyed by those statues and the temples.
Totally. Not just the statues, the temples themselves. The temples are perfectly aligned. When you walk in, it looks like you're looking in one of those mirrors where you see reflections till you look to the holiest of the holies at the very far end of the temple. And it's all perfectly symmetrical.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you walk into something that's so symmetrically aligned, it aligns you.
Yeah. No, you're right.
I think that was the original intention of all those temples, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I've realized is, even if it was carved in stone 5,000 years ago or 18,000 years ago, however long ago, the original intention stays. It's the same as with original artwork. The original intention stays in the stone. It stays in the place. And if you tune into it, it's there. But that's the other part I found very fascinating in Egypt. It's like each time I go, I unpeel another layer. There's so much. There's just so much. It's such a vast, brilliant culture. So.
Well, you know, I was watching a show about how much has not been dug up yet, that how much they're still waiting to discover that there's
exactly.
So much.
Exactly. I mean, it's buried in sand. That's what preserved it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what preserved Egypt, the fact that it's been buried in sand, hot, dry sand for thousands of years, and nothing happened to it.
And the Nile,
stone,
I mean, the power
stone,
of the...
You know, no earthquakes. Stone is very, very durable.
Yeah.
Nothing happens to it. And they didn't even use mortar.
Wow. Yeah, and the Nile, the power of that feminine energy is also, I mean, I love the fact that they gave women their power there, and the mm-hmm. Nile itself is got feeds and is still that source. I mean, it's an amazing
exactly.
thing. Sue, did you feel when you were on the Nile this amazing energy, timeless energy being on the Nile?
Absolutely. It was incredible to be on the Nile. It was just so healing and soothing, but yet people were going about their daily lives all on the Nile. It looked like Egypt 2,000 years ago, living in their little mud huts with their donkeys and doing all their agriculture, and they seemed very happy with their lives the way it was. And it was amazing. The Nile is a very unique river that mm-hmm. so many people live on, and it's the breadbasket of Egypt, really, all mm-hmm. the crops that they raise there. I mean, the tomatoes that we had there are like the best you'll ever have in the world. Watermelons were in season, cucumbers, and that's the kind of food we eat every day.
Yeah, they taste like the fruit. They taste like what they're supposed to taste
exactly.
like.
Exactly.
They don't use pesticides. It's like so natural. Fabulous produce.
And I will
olives, everything.
Yeah, I will say the food was amazing on the
boat.
Yeah.
The soups
and, yeah. and the chef. Mm. Chef is amazing. Everything is fresh every day, so it's really amazing.
And it was simple. It wasn't fancy. It was just simple, but it just
but it was just
so
you
good.
Know eggplant and zucchini.
Delicious.
And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was delicious. Yeah.
Everything was seasoned so perfectly. They do a good job.
Mm. I hadn't been aware. Sue told me that it's actually a tugboat that's powering it down the river.
Yeah, you don't even hear anything.
No.
It pushes it.
It's amazing.
Quiet.
Amazing. And so you went to some, so there were some places you went where you could do shopping. I remember Luxor had some really good deals. Did you do shopping, Gary?
You know, I specialized in perfume bottles on this trip.
Ooh.
And I purchased maybe 50 to 100 perfume bottles.
Wow.
One of them was in the shape of a dagger, and I was stopped in Egypt, and they searched my luggage because they thought I was smuggling daggers.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Yeah. And you did you also go to that temple that's kind of a rare temple towards the end of the journey? Wasn't there Abydos?
Well, we definitely went to, I think everybody has to go to Dendera and Abydos. I mean, Abydos gives the alien theory some credibility, and if people believe in that theory, and by seeing these objects that are 21st century objects that were put in the wall 5,000 years ago, 6,000 years ago. So I find that pretty amazing, definitely.
And Abydos, there is a part of the temple that we went into, which is about two stories below the original temple.
Mm.
And these blocks of stone are ginormous.
Mm.
And the Nile is still like at that part of the temple, and it's like a bright green color.
Mm.
And the flower of life is carved inside of one of the pillars. So, I mean, and we were told by Emil that it's 18,000 years old.
Wow.
So I believe it. And we looked at the top of pillars. You know, you see these big round circles, and underneath them are the whole pillar. So it was like a temple built on top of a temple.
Wow. How amazing.
So these things have gotten buried in the sand. When they say that 80 or 90% of Egypt is still buried, I get it. I really get it, because most of the temples are really below the surface of the land now. They were dug out.
So what was this about aliens and proof of aliens? What was that you're saying?
Well, there's a hieroglyphic.
Yeah.
It's a temple of Abydos that are up high that are supposed to be representing the Gulf War. There's like a stealth bomber, which hadn't been used until then. There's a big eagle. There's, you know, all these planes and missiles.
Wow.
So supposedly, you know, I had read about it many, many years ago. And then when I got there to see it the first time, it really didn't register. And the second time, it registered. But there's so much to wrap your mind around in Egypt. It's really hard to comprehend all of it at once. And so that, you know, to me, my biggest thing in this trip has been that they really came from the future to build Egypt. And it's not an easy thing to, you know, logically even say to yourself. But this time, I got it. I really got it. I could see it. And so Abydos is one of the oldest temples. Abydos and Saqqara. And Saqqara is like ultra, ultra modern. I mean, you know, it also looks like it came out of the future.
Well, we've only got a couple minutes left, but are you going to be going back?
Yes, we are.
We're going back next year, April 14th. Kathy from Captivating Journeys and Gary and Andrea Smith are going to cruise the Nile. And the high point of this journey, I think, is going to be going to the top of Mount Sinai, where Moses received the Ten Commandments, and going to St. Catherine's Monastery, which holds the oldest Bible on the planet. So I really think that that's going to be a highlight. We wanted to do something different. Andrea and I went to Mount Sinai about 15 years ago, the last time we were there. We know the mountain's still there, and they even say they have the original burning bush.
Wow. All right. The original burning bush. The original burning bush.
Yes. It's not burning.
It's not burning. And we stay in a hotel, a Bedouin hotel, and have a Bedouin dinner. It's really going to be, it'll be very unique.
Oh,
so something different.
Wow. Well, I guess that sounds like something I'll have to do. I mean, the last two trips I know I hear about it, I'm going, oh gosh, I wish I'd been there. But I'm sure many of our listeners said the same thing exactly. It's like, I want to do this. But get past your fears, folks. And Kathy will tell you, Sue will tell you, a trip of a lifetime you'll never forget, and you'll be glad you went. And you can call Captivating Journeys at 244-1414 if you're calling and listening somewhere later online. Would they dial another number, Kathy?
They can 1-800-344-9086 or our website at captivatingjourneys.com.
Yeah, because these are kind of trips you do want to kind of plan in advance for.
It's very limited.
And, you know,
yes.
I want to say that we already have 4 cabins reserved.
Out of 10.
There are 4 to 5 cabins still available. And I know we're going to have a wonderful journey. And I know people will be putting their deposits in within the next 30 days. So Kathy's been doing this, been a friend of mine for a long time. And I'm so happy that we're working on it together.
Yeah, I know. It's she still talks about it. And I mean, hearing Sue talk about it, just it's so fantastic that people get a chance to experience this with the level of insight, spirituality, and professionalism and quality that you are able to offer with Mohammed and the help of the way it's being done. It's really unbelievable, the quality that you give people.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you saying that.
No, it's the truth, you know. So people, only four cabins left.
No, 6 cabins.
6 cabins, mm-hmm. And it's 1 year to go, but don't wait because they'll be gone. 10 people is pretty intimate. So, again, 244-1414, you can call Kathy at Captivating Journeys. And I just adore what you do. You and Andrea are just absolute angels, just so wonderful. So thank you so much, Andrea and Gary, and aloha.
Oh, you're so welcome, Cindy. Aloha, aloha, everyone.
Aloha, Sue. Aloha, and thank you, everyone, here for listening.